Hey, everybody. It's LOI Central with Dan and Johnny.
You're welcome along to episode 38 of LOI Central in association with FugeDicting.ie. This is Johnny Ward and Dan McDonald, and today we're joined by Pulitzer Prize winning potential journalist David Snaith, Brendan Clark, top goalkeeper. And Dan has just reminded me before we came on that our last pod was actually recorded last Monday. And Dan, has this been the craziest time between podcasts that has ever happened? And not just on about yesterday. What is going on, Dan? What is going on?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of crazy things happening in the last couple of years, Johnny, between various podcasts being recorded. But I think in terms of football-wise, I think so, yeah, it probably is. I mean, we should probably also explain to start, like, why aren't we in studio, more to the point as well, before we get on
to
it.
You want to start,
like,
or me?
Well, you can start. Like, what's your story? Like, well, why aren't we in Oliver Marketing today? Well, actually, neither of us would have been there as it happened, but... I'll take the floor. I met you at the cup final after the cup final on Sunday, and you'd enjoyed the day. But a couple of weeks back, I know that you had maybe gone over on your ankle playing a bit of Astro. I knew you were struggling, to be fair. And I met you on Sunday after the game. You were in good spirits, or you stank of spirits, one or the other. And
like
you all of a sudden ended up in a very different place. Tell us about your cup final story.
Yeah, it was all that. And then I woke up on Monday morning with a double fracture in the ankle. So I had to go to Vincent's, and now I'm in a cast and I'm not going to be able to move for 2 months. I can't believe you're starting with this. So all the stories you could start with, you're starting with me. Like,
I'm just explaining why we're not in studio.
Why are you not in studio?
Well, I mean, you can't really talk about people's personal health, but there's a COVID case. There's a COVID case in the house. So I have spent the last 24 hours with all the madness going on. Also, for the first time in my life, actually being a single parent. I haven't a clue where anything is. I don't know where anything is in the house. I think my daughter's already taken up smoke. She's taken up smoking already, I think. She's very stressed. And like, honestly, just realize I don't know where Anthony is. It's absolute carnage and chaos. And then every time you sit down for 10 minutes, like, someone has left, someone has gone somewhere, something mad has happened. So I was speaking to someone a few minutes ago, and I had to ask them, had I spoken to them earlier this day, or was it yesterday, or was it 2 days ago? I just have no idea.
You've deleted more tweets that I've written today than managers who have moved to other clubs. And that is, like, you're so paranoid about everything at the moment. You've gone crazy. What's happening? You've been on the top of the story.
Well, no, listen, Johnny, I just think we've spoken before about your social media activity. You're just a bit... there's a lot of people out there with frayed emotions at the moment.
Yes,
and the last thing they need is LOI Central wading in with banter posts, you know, about, like, who's in charge where or there. Like, just because you're sitting with your cast and your ankle a bit bored, it's like, do you not realise, like, people are very unhappy around a lot of things that have happened.
What a cast we have tonight, though.
A lot of things have been reported, but there you go. It's a good segue. I like that.
What a cast we have tonight. Brendan Clark, I did meet you recently, and you said you must be really struggling, bottom of the barrel, to have you in the podcast. So Damien Duff didn't think that. He's signed off for the new season. How are you keeping?
Yeah, all good, Johnny, yeah. It always seems to be when no one else answers your text that I get a text from Mom. But listen, thanks for having me on. Look, obviously, I've spoke to Damien, and, you know, looking forward to 2022 now.
Well, I'd say we'd more chance of getting Duffer on than some of the managers that are actually in the league at the moment. But we did get David Snaith, who only last Friday wrote what is arguably one of the most celebrated League of Ireland pieces ever. And I completely forgotten about that today, Snaith, because of everything that's happened since.
No, well, I definitely didn't forget that you were drinking vodka and ginger ale on Sunday after the cup final, which is
why
I presume
you have to mention that, to be fair now.
Well, I just presume that has something to do way you have a broken ankle, does it?
It's not unrelated, to be fair.
It is the first time I've never heard of that combination of a drink in my life.
I think when I was in my early 20s, Dan.
I think Johnny's walk home was like a reincarnation of Waterford's season, in that there was like, he probably didn't start off in great spirits. There was a temporary belief that everything was turning around. And then ended up the following morning, no one knowing what the hell has happened. Because, like, we will talk about, like, what happened in the last 3 or 4 days in a minute. But like, I had to remind you before we came on that like 10 days ago when we did the last podcast, Mark Bertram was still the manager of Waterford. Like, have we ever had a 7 to 10 days like this? Like Tuesday morning, I was up like making a cup of tea, put the kettle on, and you see that Mark Bertram has already like, I think, tweeted and been sacked, you know, and all of this happening in a very, very short space of time. And, you know, the playoff on Friday, which ended with like Richard Forrest, the Waterford chairman, standing up at the edge of the director's box and leaving as soon as possible after full time as this nightmare unraveled. And like for a club that had been like really active on social media, like there's been nothing said since. Like we're talking now like Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Like Richard Forrest hasn't posted anything since, having been very active. I haven't checked in the last day or two, but Waterford's last post on Twitter was the full time result from the UCD game.
That is
full time. Full time UCD win 2-1. It's honestly like it's like the world ended. Do you know what I mean? Like it's like sort of
year looking zero. At
it's you like I was going to say, I've just been, admit what that talk's coming to my head there. I've been binging Seinfeld on Netflix for the last little while, and it just reminds me, this is Waterford that doing the whole George Costanza, where they quit a job, but then just come back as if they've never quit. So they just come back on now, and now we're still a Premier Division club. What's going on?
I just checked you, 90+5, full-time, Blues 2-1 and are down, UCD are promoted. That was 9:41 on Friday night, and it's like, that's it. Like, disappeared without a trace. Like, there's going to be a Netflix documentary asking where they went. I did see, like, you know, the chairman is getting awful grief. Now, the one thing I would say around the whole Mark Bertram thing, because, I mean, it ended up with him and the crowd, and it all just turned into a bit of a circus, really. I'm not sure if anyone really came out of it looking terrifically well. Waterford having read now, they were invited to have a right of reply and didn't provide the right of reply. You know, they would have been approached for comment, and they haven't. And unless there's some big reply coming, because Mark Bertram was in Talk Sport and you know, was out there, and his point of view is very well known. He was doing selfies with fans. And it does appear, to be fair, that a lot of people in football are very sympathetic with his plight. But in saying that, the other side are still entitled to have their say. But their silence, to be fair, doesn't reflect especially well on the situation. But they are entitled to have their say. But, I mean, you have this mad situation now where you have no club from Munster in the Premier Division. Tala is the southernmost ground in the Premier Division in 2022, and that's not good, no matter what. And like, again, we can joke about it, and like, there was a sort of a tragicomic sort of slapstick nature to the whole thing, but actually just for Waterford generally it was a disaster. And I know it's a league where players come, players go, that's the nature of life. We're going to talk about that and things that have happened in the last couple of days with manager. But you know, Brian Murphy was genuinely in tears coming out of the dressing room on Friday. And it's like, you know, not crocodile tears either. Like, you know, you can tell when someone is genuinely upset. You know, someone who's come home to probably play out his career in his hometown club, which is a great vision, but now realistically probably wants to keep playing. It's going to have to move because the club effectively imploded. And I mean, I don't know, Clarkie, like you know dressing rooms, you know football. You have a prominent position in the PFA Ireland. You know, you've been through scenarios and situations, but from outside, this Waterford one looks, it's up there at one of the more bonkers ones of recent years.
Yeah, it is. Like, you think of all the structures that Mark would have put in place and kind of formations and how people play and that, and you're building into the biggest game of their season, and for that to go 3 days before the game, you know, it's crazy. I was in Richmond for the game, and you could tell that, you know, it was just all over the place. I mean, UCD were fully deserving of the win. I mean, I think bar the goal, I don't think Lorcan Healy really had a save to make on the night for UCD. But no, like you said, it's firstly to UCD, and Miller, who was obviously through a tough week. But no, it's what went on. It doesn't shine a good light on the league, you know, especially when you hear Mark's side of the story go out, and that's the only side of the story that people hear. I suppose it's the perception then is that's the way it is. That's what happened, you know. And like you said, Waterford haven't spoke since, and I suppose until they do, well then, you know, there's only one side of the story out there to assume that that's the way it was.
It is a bit sad for UCD that they're not really getting much credit because it's seen as a Waterford implosion, and obviously the context of Andy Myler's dad passing away and then pulling off this achievement. And it should be mentioned that, like, a lot of people were at the Waterford UCD game in the Cup say UCD should have won the game that night, and UCD have some very good footballers that other clubs want. So, like, on one level, you'd be delighted. But what's mad, Snady, if you look at, you know, that iconic map of Korea at night from satellite images where you have, like, Southern Korea is completely lit up and North Korea is just like a couple of little dots. If you had a map of Ireland now where there's a club in the top flight of the whole Ireland, the south of Ireland is basically like North Korea. There's a little enclave like on the northwest and a little part of Dublin and Drogheda. It's really, really stark on much of the country. And as well as that, when you look at the viewing figures for the women's game against, like, this game against Jokva game, really, against Georgia, far more people watch that than watch the FAI Cup final on Sunday. That's where we're at the moment. There are large parts of this country that just don't relate to the LOI.
I don't know if it's so much a case of they don't relate. It's just what's happened in the last little while. The clubs have fallen out. Like, Cork went through a serious period with Dundalk where it was Cork and Dundalk, two non-Dublin clubs. And, like, that's pretty much a rivalry that dominated most of a decade and captured, I would say, a lot of imagination. And even with Cork, I think their crowds have been relatively strong even in the last little while with Colin Healy rebuilding there too. Well, obviously, what's happened... The nature of what makes it feel worse is just because, I know you have to give credit to UCD, but it does feel as if it's just an absolute shambles of what's happened at a club that has led to this situation. But, like, yeah, it's not going to be ideal next year. What, half of the clubs are from Dublin, but I don't necessarily think it's, oh, that means that no one else in the country cares about what's happening in the League of Ireland. The fact that it's even talked about means that there obviously are people who care about it. And obviously you're going to have a situation where you would imagine that next year as well, that one of the biggest challenges is going to come from the north and Derry. Sligo, you would think, should be able to improve under Liam Buckley. So that you would think would hopefully be two clubs who could actually put up a serious challenge. See what happens with Dundalk and Stevie O'Donnell as well. And then obviously the Dublin clubs too. But so, yeah, don't get me wrong. Obviously, ideally, you would like to be able to get back to those days when Cork City were absolutely top of the tree and really putting it up to other clubs, and the Turner's Cross, which is still, I'd say, my favourite ground to go to in terms of going to the away match. I think it's probably the best ground in the country in that regard, even though maybe in terms of not up to date with Talia, but just for the atmosphere and stuff. Mm. But they are where they are. They're rebuilding for a reason because obviously of what happened. So, yeah.
Okay, we'll try to. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, though, I mean, you talk about the viewing figures. Maybe part of the viewing figures on Sunday was affected by the fact that everyone was at the game.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Such a great crowd. And to be fair, up against Chelsea, Manchester United. So that's a very, very, very significant point in the context of the viewing figures, to be fair. Yeah. It's just something that wouldn't have been the case last night. But.
It smells like a festival. I'm trying to do this as chronologically best as I can, Dan, in terms of the last 9 days. Waterford UCD, yeah. What was next?
Waterford UCD, what was next? Well, that was Friday. Then we had, David Snade's walk through Dublin, yeah, with the lads, yeah.
Didn't pay the Lewis fare.
I thought it was an amazing article. I've praised them publicly, but I mean, it wasn't the only article written last week, to be fair, Johnny, too.
Was,
you know, like, you have to be clear, you know. Yeah. And I've told him several times it was a very good article, but I mean, in the journalism game, you only have a certain quota of kindness you can sort of, you know, you can actually
shower you with praise on Sunday, Snady.
I know, yeah, you want me a point at everything, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. You're already points.
Well, Dan did this lovely piece in on Stephen O'Donnell and Padge. So, Dan, I don't know. I mean, okay, you can take it over. What happened after that, anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the timeline of this is probably part of the contention, you know, with everything that's happened here. And we've had a massive domino effect that's been triggered by Stephen O'Donnell's desire to leave St. Pat's and go to Dundalk. It's pretty obvious, you know, Tim Clancy. We're speaking now again. By the time this goes out, who knows? There might be some announcements and sort of press releases and stuff. But you know, it is going to happen that Tim Clancy's the St. Pat's manager. It is going to happen that Kevin Doherty will become the manager of Drogheda. And the domino effect that triggered all that is, you know, is started from Stephen O'Donnell's desire to go to Dundalk. Now, I would have done a story in for Monday's newspaper about this. I saw it, someone suggest that it had been like I put it up at 2:30 in the morning. I wasn't up that late. It's just if you do anything on Monday morning's paper, just naturally gets uploaded at 2:30 a.m. So it wasn't actually like sitting up during the night to do it. Just that he was the number one target. And I think, you know, people are sort of the view that, well, you know, everything was tied up and done before that. Now, my understanding of it would be that wasn't the case, but I don't think anyone's ever going to fully believe that. How that was, how I would reach that sort of that conclusion is that certainly I would be aware from the dock end they weren't sort of absolutely certain that this was going to be their new boss, you know, because there was other candidates in the mix who needed to be informed of where things stood, and they weren't informed of where things stood until sort of the last 24 hours or so. So there wasn't 100% confidence like that this was going to happen, but obviously, you know, it would appear that you know, Stephen O'Donnell had made up his mind, and that is sort of slowly but surely, you know, filtered out there. And clearly in the, you know, Dave, you know, can talk to us, Snady can talk to us in a minute, because he would have been doing stories that would have been, I guess, very much reflected maybe some of the views from the St. Pat's end of things. And he can probably take that along in a minute. But
Clarkey's a Pat's, you know, fan as well.
Well, no, but I don't think Clarkey filed a story on it unless he wants to come in and start telling us that he did. Don't put him on the spot.
We want the Pats fan view on it.
Don't put him on the spot there. But you asked me for a chronology, and again, you've suddenly interrupted me halfway through. So
that's how podcasts work, Dan.
No,
it's actually how podcasts work.
It's just this one, yeah. But the listen, the shit hit the fan obviously on Tuesday evening, when Stephen O'Donnell informed St. Pat's of his intention to leave. And certainly people in the Pat's hierarchy were not expecting it at all. They weren't expecting it at all. No matter what's been said subsequently, that doesn't appear to have been, you know, to be the case. It has created a situation where there's a big dispute around the details of Stephen O'Donnell's arrangement with St. Pat's. Again, you know, to sort of get in there, because I would have got quite a few messages from people who would have, you know, said, oh, well, what is it about this 2-year contract? And he signed this contract and almost a suggestion that you knew about it all along. Like, when I would have been reporting across this on whatever day it was, Tuesday, my interest, and Dave would know this, my primary interest is to find out, is he going? Is he going? Is this what's happening? Is the move happening? And I was sort of aware that there probably might be some issues to be resolved between the clubs, but I wasn't 100% clear on what that might be. But obviously, you know, if there was confidence from, you know, a side that this move would happen, there clearly wasn't a fear that this, whatever this issue was, would be an issue. You know, if someone really believes that, you know, they're on this sort of locked into a long-term deal, then they know that this is like a massive complication and it's probably an obstacle to it. And there's a belief that this isn't going to be a problem. And as a result, you know, you would have gone ahead and said, you know, that this is going to happen because parties believe it's fine. Now, subsequently, obviously, Pats would argue, and it does appear that what this is going to come down to, that I think, you know, just to that, that's the obstacle to this just all being ratified and being done, is going to come down to basically people's interpretation of a contractual situation. But I mean, maybe Dave can talk about sort of, because he was reporting around that. Yeah,
you put it very well there. And I suppose, let's hear from you now, Snady, because what strikes me is that Dan speaks about the Burton situation going sour so quickly at Waterford. But this is incredible to see the pictures of love and happiness on Sunday of these individuals who now basically are so angry with the manager and can't believe what's happened at St. Pat's. What's your take on it?
Similar to what Dan was saying, what you were saying there, it's actually genuinely a case of a bit of shock. In the press conference after, when Stephen O'Donnell and Alan Matthews did a joint press conference in the Aviva, obviously Dan would have been there, Bermo came in, Darragh Bourne came in, and it was
Lee Desmond.
And they were there actually waiting to speak before O'Donnell had finished and stuff. And obviously, I think one of the last questions that was put to O'Donnell was about his future. And he was not as effusive as you might have thought someone who had just won the Cup would be about what was going to be happening next year. And then that kind of made you sit up and think a little bit about what was happening. And then when the three lads were speaking, well, the two lads really, because Darragh Bourne's only really answered a couple of questions, they just spoke so passionately about what Stephen O'Donnell had done for the club and for them as individuals. Chris Forrester had mentioned it as well, just how put down so much down his resurgence down to the belief that O'Donnell had instilled in him, and just the kind of the standards that he would have been setting around the place. And it was literally, even at that point after that press conference, obviously the Pat's hierarchy, basically as it was put to me, were like, fuck, we have a problem here. But they didn't know to what extent what was happening. And then the celebrations were happening, obviously, in the Red Cow and bits of McDowell's or whatever on the Sunday night. Scarkey would know well. And they continued a little bit on Monday when some of the staff would have got together. And even on Monday, some of the staff still were under the impression that he was staying. There was no sense. I know Padge Craig had gone back to Scotland. That's because basically Padge's wife lives over there. They're building a house and stuff there. But he's barely being back, obviously, with COVID and all the rest of it. And he just needed to go back and sit to his wife. But there was issues beginning to fester then. And then it was put to me on Tuesday morning. I was doing Off the Ball on Tuesday morning. And O'Donnell was actually supposed to be on the show when he was going to be coming on. And I was being told then that it's going to be good news for Pats fans, talking about the fact that it's going to be tied up pretty much 100% about this contract that he'd agreed to in the September, because apparently, as it's been put to me, it was back in May is when the clubs first tried to discuss about a new contract. Obviously he would have signed his original contract for 2 years, for two seasons in 2019. And then Pat's exercised an option that they said was as part of that contract that he would have another 2 years. Obviously put that to his representative and that had been accepted, they're saying in writing. But they've accepted now, they know that he's gone, essentially. Pat's are realising now that he's not going to be the manager, that he is going to be going to Dundalk. But then it was only on Tuesday afternoon when Gareth Kelleher and Stephen O'Donnell actually had a face-to-face meeting. I think it lasted not even a half an hour, that it was put to him that O'Donnell said, listen, I'm going to Dundalk. That's where he felt his heart was, where his gut was. That was his instinct. He was talking about some people, even put to me, mates, he's gone to Dundalk for money. But I don't even think it is a case that Dundalk are offering him loads of money or whatever. I don't think it's that at all. I genuinely do think maybe he's just had a bit more of a draw to what is going to be happening at Dundalk. And then I don't think it was too much longer after they had that meeting, Gary Kelleher and Stevie O'Donnell, that Dundalk then obviously announced that Vinnie Pert was leaving. It's a mess on both sides, in the sense that if Pats really did think that he was boxed off and staying, then players should have been getting sorted out as well with contracts. But then there's an issue over, was the cup final always being used to not get fellas tied down, but just buying a bit of time themselves in terms of seeing what was going to be playing out. But that's he said, she said stuff really, that neither both sides will have ideas of how that played out. I just think it's a very, very sad way of how it's ended. As tends a lot, 99% of the time it's in football, I don't think it quite ends as messy as this, but it never really ends for a player leaving a club or a manager leaving or something. There's always regrets, there's always that feeling of it's never going to be perfect of how it's left. But I just think with the fact of how the cup, winning the cup at the weekend, and then but a couple of 40 hours later the fella is gone, and players still weren't aware. A couple of things. It's sad to say it, but scenes of almost devastation among some of the people at Pats around the club when they realised what was happening. People were seriously upset. I think Gary Kelleher has been quite so angry situation of how something's unfolded as is at the moment. I don't know. I kind of think, well, if a fella wants to do what he wants to do, and if he doesn't feel that he's under contract, if he says that there's actual wiggle room there, well, then I think the club have to kind of eat it a little bit, and they have to say, well, do you know what? They maybe could have been on top of it a bit quicker and a bit sooner if that was going on. But I don't know. It is a tough one to take. But we'll be interested. I don't know, again, talking about putting people on the spot. Like, I wonder with Clarkey even going back to a slightly different situation, but like the 2012 Cup final when like Trevor Crowley, like where players would have been aware of what was happening then, the fact that Trevor was leaving and going to, well, he was going to Rovers then, like it's sort of a similar situation then. Bit different in terms of it's the main man going, I suppose, but I wonder just from a player's point of view of how they'll be kind of reacting to this, because some players now are quite angry about it, other players are kind of like, whatever, will I still get sorted out kind of thing, whatever, either way. But I wonder now of how players in the dressing room will be kind of reacting, you know.
Yeah, well, just in terms of Trevor never rang me, so I never knew what was going on, you know. Look, obviously, it transpired that Trevor ended up taking the Rovers job and took a couple of lads with him. And you hear stories of what might have gone on before in the lead up to the Cup final and that. But look, you never know the full story there. Again, like in terms of, like, it's not ideal. You win a cup and I don't want to come across, because look, I've got the way I left the club and stuff. I don't want it to come across like I'm throwing O'Donnell under the bus here. And like there's no intention there at all. But you look back at Rovers when they won the cup, and then they went on, they built on that to go on and win the league. I'm sure a lot of the players would have been thinking that, look, okay, we've proved we can win something here. Let's go to the next step, and you know, we're all part of what's being built and stuff. So I mean, for that to be kind of pulled from under their feet less than 2 days, probably after the best day, I suppose, in some of their careers, you know, it's, I'm sure it leaves a sour taste in some of their mouths.
Pat's gave a chance as well. Sorry, Dan. Pat's gave CB a chance when he was completely unproven as a manager. And so they did give him that chance. Where did it go from that to this, Clarkey?
I don't know, Johnny. I don't think it's a question for me to answer. I don't think it's a question for anyone here to answer or to. I think it's only going to be Stevie that knows what happened, you know, and what went on. And I mean, until the dust settles a bit.
I mean, just to come in, I suppose. There is a devil's advocate point to make here, because I know a lot of Pat's anger is about, say, you know, the players' scenarios. If Stephen O'Donnell had said to players, listen, there might be something, you know, I'm not 100% sure about my future here, you know, could that have been 2012 style distraction that becomes a lot of noise in such a way that all of a sudden it impacts the cup final and Pats don't have a cup final on the agenda? Now, like, I will, and really no one really cares about the sort of media aspect of this, but we have had some reader comments to us that I don't really want to ignore either, because then it just looks like you're actually dodging them. But like, you know, a couple of Bose people onto us saying, well, you know, you, and to me basically saying, like, you would have done stories before the cup final about, say, Bose people who were leaving, including, or, you know, likely to be leaving, including Keith Buckley, and why wasn't something done around, say, the Pats scenario? And like, I think, you know, it's easy to perceive something as being part of some kind of sort of a campaign or plan, but like, we all know, I think, to some degree, what the League of Ireland is like. And if you actually, you know, sat down and actually wrote a story and every little rumor and every little chat you heard about what might be happening and where someone might be going and what the situation might be, I mean, you could be doing stuff every day. Like, you know, there's a million stories you could have heard in the last couple of weeks, and not all of them are true. And like, by my nature, sometimes with this stuff, I can be almost a bit conservative sometimes as well too, and want to be sure, you know, absolutely sure that something is happening. And to be fair, with some of the Bow stuff that was done, like, I'm sure that that's happening. You know, there's more speculation around people at Bow's that I didn't write, that I'm aware of, that, you know, was going around. And I didn't, because I'm not 100% sure of that being the case. And, like, you know, Georgie Kelly, the top scorer in the league, been out of contract and loads of managers coming to watch him, is not, that's not destabilizing. That's something that happens before the cup final every year. And if any top scorer was out of contract, that would be the same with Richie Terrell or many other players, right? And the other stuff of Bowes is just, unfortunately, it's happening, and Bowes have left themselves in a situation. Now, what I would say is that I didn't realise until after the game on Sunday how many Pats players were out of contract. And even that press conference that you refer to, Dave,
yeah,
like, it was actually Lee Desmond sort of saying, what's the story with contracts? Now, I know people are now sort of trying to suggest that that's up to the manager, but I would say that, like, you know, if you're in a situation even where it's only been done in the last couple of weeks, that's more a reflection of club policy. They weren't handing out two-year deals at the start of the season. Like, Lee Desmond pointed out that Jamie Lennon was the only player on a long-term one. Like, if you are going year to year, in a lot of cases, you do leave yourself vulnerable, you know, to a situation where they were challenging this year with a Shamrock Rovers team that had players on 3-4 year contracts. So yeah. I think, like, that is a point that needs to be made in response to it. But, like, you know, I think there was, and sorry, to answer the broader point of, like, I would have been up at the Dundalk Derry game last Friday week, and I was trying to suss out what the story was with the takeover, what's happening. And I would have put out some stuff in the aftermath saying that I had the sense that the Dundalk were going to be pretty competitive next year. And I think it would have been known out there, and people know, and people with a knowledge of Dundalk would know that the owners who've taken over are serious. Like, you know, there's some serious people involved. Stat Sports in the coming years are going to be pretty serious. And I think that was a pretty attractive job. And, you know, I think there was multiple current League of Ireland managers who would have been interested in that position.
Including Tim Clancy.
You know, multiple, yeah. And, like, you know, and I'm not saying that all of them would have, you know, been in the frame, but I think there's ways and means of letting things be known. So that would have been an attractive job to a lot of people. So I think, you know, that's something to bear in mind in terms of people, you know, mystifying as to why he might be going. I think it would be known within football, and certainly would have been discussed, you know, in the circles I would be in, that, like, this Dundalk job is going to be a good job, and it's going to be interesting to people, and that's going to be the case. So, like, I have to say, I'm not surprised that, you know, Stevie O'Donnell has gone that way. And if you'd said to me, you know, I would have written a story on Sunday night for Monday morning, and I would have talked to Dave later on. Like, I had a feeling at that stage, I thought that it would happen. But you need to, you know, you need to be very certain to say that something's happening, to say it's a done deal. And I wouldn't have had that certainty at all.
You imagine, he has to be a small bit torn.
Yeah, of course. And I still think there was people at the Dundalk end of things who were very worried that this, you know, they'd sort of hear that this isn't a runner, you know, that this isn't a runner at all. That scenario didn't come to pass. And as I said, not to go back to the Nubba debate, like, they, you know, there was obviously, people always find out stuff and information. People can talk around about the sort of official approaches and all of these things, and of course there is always a process that needs to go through, but we all know in every area of football what happens, and anyone involved in football who says otherwise is sort of in dreamland, you know, if they don't think that there's discussions that would take place all the time, and you wouldn't know the half of them, like, particularly in this league. So,
yeah,
but actually at a global level too. So, like, you know, you see managers in the Premier League, you know, getting, you know, Daniel Farke's gone and someone comes in later that day, like, and you try and say that there wasn't sort of sounding out and stuff happening. I mean, come on, you know, there would have been an awareness that this was a good job, but I honestly didn't. If I thought last week that this was something that was definitely happening after the cup final, Of course, you know, you would go there, but I didn't have an inkling, and I got the sense that everything was cup final focused.
Yeah, and maybe it was, but if I just bring in Clarkey on this, someone from a rival club said to me that today that basically Pats had screwed up on this in terms of contracts and so forth. They could completely see why Stevie was doing this. What's your take on that as a player in terms of contractual situation and obviously the difficulties around that in the League of Ireland?
Well, in terms of player contracts?
Yeah, so a lot of the Pats players are out of contract.
Yeah, well, across the board in the whole league, Johnny, it's the same. I mean, you've got nearly 75% of players in the league are out of contract at the end of the 2021 season.
Mm.
You know, and that's a lot of players, you know. Jesus, there's 300 odd players in the league. So, you know, it's 225 an MBO contract, if my maths is correct, geez. So I mean, I think as a league going forward, I think there's a bigger debate around the whole professionalism of the league there, and in terms of introducing longer term 52-week contracts. And again, you're going down another rabbit hole in terms of funding and how, you know, clubs will ask, how do we get this? But I mean, until we have that conversation and until we fix them problems, then we're going to have the same issue at the end of every season.
You'll now have Pat's players who will be in the boat of, wonder will Stephen O'Donnell want to bring him to Dundalk? Wonder will Tim Clancy fancy them? Wonder will Tim Clancy bring in someone from Drogheda or elsewhere to replace them? Or wonder will they be kept on at all? And it's just mad how much is happening here.
Yeah, look, I can relate to them. Obviously, at Shelbourne, we had the same at the end of the last season. At the end of the season, we obviously, Ian Morris had departed and Damien had been announced as manager, and a lot of the squad were out of contract. And, you know, you're playing a waiting game then, and you're kind of hoping for the phone to ring and get good news. And that's all you can do, really.
And the crazy thing is, Nady, we're here about 40 minutes now and we haven't discussed the cup final at all. And does this diminish the, you know, the warmth of that feeling that the Pats fans and players had? Because all of those images are, to me, a little bit tainted now, because this was the start of a breakup as well.
Yeah, like, I know for some of the people around the club, it has completely, totally. For some of my friends who'd be Pats fans, it hasn't really, because they had an amazing day on Sunday and had great celebrations, and it's a moment that they won't forget and stuff. And my little nephew went to his first game. He's only five. He'd kind of been tempted to start going down to watch Rovers, because a few of his mates go down to watch Rovers now because they're in there playing in their little academy and stuff. But my dad made sure to bring him to throw the Pats hat on him. I went over to Maz earlier on today, and he was going around the house saying "fuck balls," which I thought was absolutely brilliant. Which I thought was brilliant, just from the point of view of that. Like, I'm not even messing. Like, he's been over to Old Trafford as well, and he's actually had a lot more of a buzz since coming back from that game than he did at Old Trafford when we went over. Like, in terms of like actually loving going to the match with me dad and stuff, but then like the fact that he was going to a game in Dublin, he didn't realise it to be, even though he's been to an Ireland game, but he just said it was totally different. He's only like six later on this month. So in terms of that, like, I'll always have fond memories of that, because like, as far as I'm concerned, it's the start of the indoctrination from him to actually going to League of Ireland and realising that there's loyal football that you can go and watch every week. But I think from now, like, I think it's going to be massive. Like, I know. Obviously, like, Tim Clancy would be quite highly rated. I think if he's able to keep a core of the squad together, which I know obviously the club have already kind of started to do that earlier on Wednesday, and it's going to be happening later on Thursday, that a lot of players who they were under the impression were kind of pretty much set to come when Stephen O'Donnell was going to be manager, that they do stay. So that's going to be stuff that's going to, the club are working on over the next couple of days to actually get them boxed off, because there is definitely the makings of something. The only issue is that it did feel as if it was Stephen O'Donnell was the one driving that, and it's whether or not the next person who comes in can continue on, though, not even continue on, but maintain the standard that has been set. Because I do think that the change in attitude around the club and the sense of focus around the club has been
Well,
so I do think it's been a lot different. And now, if it is, well, it's more than likely will. That definitely will be Tim Clancy. That's the challenge for him now, is to actually show that he is capable of keeping Pats at that level, but also getting closer to Rovers, dealing with what's going to be happening with Derry City, and obviously as well Dundalk too.
Well, it'd be very hard to come up with who your manager of the year is, and you can make a case for four or five managers, but mine would be Tim Clancy for what he did with that draw of the team. But Dan, you were slagging me about being at that Callie's Call live kind of podcasting last week. I'd appointed Kev Doherty beforehand, and I was having the crack that, like, basically you and Tim Clancy are going to be like Cluffy and Taylor. You're going to be together forever. And he had to remind me, like, that he was manager of Shells, and I'd actually forgotten that he was a manager himself. He's now going to become manager of Drogheda. Tim and him have gone their separate ways. Tim is a seriously ambitious manager taking over Pats. So the amount of layers to this story just really is bonkers, even by League of Ireland standards.
Yeah, and there's probably more to come, you know. The sort of we'll see what happens, and sort of, you know, Tim will have to bring in a number two, you know. And again, like, it's one of those, if you not going to be me, no. Like, again, it's one of these where, you know, you don't just write every rumor you hear, you know. You have to wait to be sure that something's going to happen, but that could be something that happens over the next couple of days. We'll see. It could be an interesting one. And there's
you're really filling us here with, like, what's going to happen.
Sorry, but I don't know what's going to happen, Johnny, and I'm too conservative. I don't like to put out something and then look like an arse afterwards.
The biggest revelation on this podcast that Clarkie was in McDowell's.
But Stave wants to say something there about that. He understands.
Clarkie wasn't even at the cup final.
I meant from celebrations past, Clark, No, actually, the thought only occurred to me there. I wonder, remember when you were saying, Brendan, about waiting for the call when a new manager will come in? Like, what did Duff say to you? Like, what, when he called you? Like, is it just very straight to the point, or does he tell you how much he loves you and how much he wants you? what does Duff do?
No, it was a short enough phone call. It was that he would like me to be at the club next season, what he expected of me, and that's pretty much it, and what he wants to do with the place, and wants me to be on board with it, and look, that was it. It was short and sweet, and then you go and you deal with your contract with the club. That's pretty much it. But it was more of a relief that, you know, the phone call came, because look, last year I'd left, I'd joined Shells to go and enjoy me football, to go and win the fourth division, and, you know, obviously to be successful there, and, you know, from playing with the club, from getting to know the people around the place, and you know, that built the weight up a bit more that I wanted to be there next year. So once Ian goes and, you know, Damien's announced, you're kind of like, oh, you're just waiting on that call, you know. And then when he does call, it's still a will he, won't he kind of thing. But no, look, I'm probably one of the lucky ones that he wanted to keep around, and you know, it's
You have to be totally buzzing as well, because, like, this must be the most hotly anticipated League of Ireland ever in many respects. Jack Byrne's coming back, the Derry situation, Stevie's taken over Dundalk, Pats have just won the Cup, Sligo finished third, Rovers have become very, very strong, and Damien Duff's over Shell. So, like, this is going to be one hell of a season. I know you're already back in the gym as well.
Yeah. No, we started back. I mean, the first division players, we would have finished up a month ago. So, you know, look, that's long enough off for us, and it was more a case of we're going to be doing our own kind of gym programs ourselves, so why not get together and do it in a structured way, you know. It's not the start of pre-season, it's just a way of keeping on top of it. But, you know, looking at 2022, I think there's a whole feel good, you know, there's a great feeling around Irish football at the moment as a whole, you know, from the national team through the league, in terms of, you know, potential stories next year, and you know, like you said, anything can happen, and even into the women's side of things as well. You know, it's massive. So I think now is the time to really kick on and push the league and really embrace this kind of crest of a wave that we're on in terms of publicity and goodwill towards the league and Irish football as a whole.
Yeah, and Snady, the 39,000 at the Cup Final. It wasn't a classic, but extra time had so much going on. An amazing goal by Forrester. Penalty shootout, 300,000 watching on the penalty shootout. And I brought four non-League of Ireland fans to the game. They couldn't get over the atmosphere.
Well, no, yeah, no, the atmosphere was actually fantastic. It was brilliant for the whole game. But I know obviously there was the issues what happened with the round at the Irish Town House and what happened there, which was obviously appalling and stuff. But it was, I think, why the violence and stuff, and why that even struck more of a chord, why it kind of, you know, hit home even more, was just because like it felt so out of kilter with what was happening around the ground and what was happening everywhere else around the ground, like going to the stadium. None of that. It was just a really good atmosphere around the place. There was a sense of actual, because those fans obviously mingling in and around each other. Didn't see any trouble other than, say, some fans getting into the press box and half a pint of Guinness getting spilled over me during the first half. and even then your woman was very polite to me. She actually apologised. So,
I thought it was Johnny, actually, to be honest, the way he was later on.
I was behind Roy Kerr.
But yeah, no, there is, it's like what Brendan was saying, and I think everyone's saying that there is, it's weird, like there is that sense of maybe, or maybe it's just because of the round of cup final, you get an extra bit of a buzz, but a sense of anticipation and a good feeling around the place. But then I suppose then there's probably fans of Pats and stuff now looking at this saying, typical Shambles now, what's going on? Like, you know what I mean? Why can't he be doing other things right to kind of maintain momentum and build a momentum? You know what I mean?
So the other thing is, like, Dan, where are Bowes fans after all of this?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I mean, Bows are pretty, like, deflated, naturally enough, you know. Although, I mean, to be fair, they were at pains to point out beforehand that it wouldn't shape their budget, what happened. And it's good, like, that the Bows have got to a position where they're not in that boom-bust cycle where, like, TNS or Salzburg or something, like a game going badly spells disaster. And you obviously want to get to that place, but still it doesn't take away from the fact that a very exciting season has ended with them finishing fifth and they don't have Europe next year. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, we didn't really talk about the details of the game. As I said, like, it wasn't terrific, to be honest. You know, it opened up a bit in extra time, and I thought that was very enjoyable. And I sort of wanted more. There was an unbelievable amount of stoppages just in the game, even just injuries and issues and stuff like that. That the second half, it just felt like it was stop-start. And even the first half had a long, you know, Robbie Benson was bandaged up, who was brilliant, by the way. And like there was 1 minute stoppage time and stuff, and it was like one of these rugby games where the ball was only in play for X amount of minutes or something, you know. But I think Bows are certainly in a situation where they're probably pretty aggrieved. And as I said, like, you know, a lot of the things that were happening, Bows, it was aware that these were things were coming down the tracks, you know. That again, Keith Long was facing into this rebuilding mission, and it's obviously quite deflating, I would assume, to have to face into doing that again. And particularly, again, we're speaking about next year there. I think it's going to be a terrific season. And again, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about Rovers and Derry and Dundalk. And I'd say even Pats, I'd say you'll have a fired up Garrett Kelleher now, which might even be a help in terms of budgetary planning, you know, for the next manager coming in. So we've talked about four clubs there, and we haven't talked about Bows, who at times this year, you know, might have felt, you know, they could challenge almost. But what, I mean, the key point is, I think this is the key point, people want to know what happens now. Like, there is still now probably a small enough pool of players in the league, like the real sort of the high end ones that aren't tied down anywhere, who are probably in a great position if we're honest, because there's all of a sudden like probably good options there for them. Bows like have offered good money from what I hear to potential signings. Now they've made some mistakes, you know. Jack Moylan went to Shells, sort of that people would be irate that that's happened. But I mean, they're competitive and they're out there in the market trying to speak to like really good players. You know, they even had a pop at trying to sign Jack Byrne. So like clearly there's funds there that will be offered. But again, a lot of these players will have alternative options. And you know, the merry-go-round is a funny thing. You know, probably by losing, for example, I've written about this, you know, probably by losing O'Donnell, the Pats probably might even have a better chance now of getting two of the drawder players, you know, James Brown and Mark Doyle, who actually do have options in the UK, who probably would have followed Clancy, I think, wherever he went. And he was sort of plan B for Dundalk might end up with Pats on account of this, but you will lose some other players. And like, football is like a food chain sometimes. Like, you know, Drogheda are getting eaten up to some degree. Shells are trying to sign a stack of the Drogheda players. And that's going to be a battle that Kev Doherty will have to face now. You know, that Tim Clancy has left. And I mean, Conor Kane, Darren Markey, you know, maybe even Dan O'Reilly, a few others. You know, the Dundalk players, are they now more inclined to probably wait and see what happens? I think it's pretty obvious that they haven't, you know, a couple of them haven't nailed down their, you know, their positions. But I mean, there's a couple of good options. I think Dan Cleary has an option in St Johnstone, but I think Shamrock Rovers is a real live option for him there too. So there's a lot going on, and I think Bows are going to be competitive. But I suppose the one question the Bows do face is, like, you have Shells coming back on the scene, who are offering morning training in Dublin, and you've got Pats again in that position, you've got Dundalk again, who are going to be proper full-time out for Shamrock Rovers. It's obvious that they are, and this whole situation that Bows have, you know, and there's a great sort of charm and romance to it. And as well, they were able to compete and get some good players with it. But if a couple of the part-time players are maybe moving on to travel, and you want to sign players on loan from the UK, say, it can be harder to do that with your evening training setup. And now you have another club like Shells in the mix who are offering morning training and probably have good connections. I'd be very, very surprised if Shells didn't make some interesting loan signings in the new year. I think maybe that's part of the post-mortem for Bows here. It's like, how realistic is it to compete without looking at your setup and asking, can you do a bit more? And I know I don't necessarily want to do that, and I know that they don't want to get into some arms race in terms of spending stuff, but I think that's part of the equation. Yeah. That Bows maybe might have to look at in the aftermath. You know, that you're going to lose players because they prefer to do things differently in terms of their lifestyle.
We did speak, Clarky, many times about how long, like, the off season is in the League of Ireland. It has shortened, but this will probably be one of the shortest ever because there's so much going to happen. You can imagine now if the fixture list shows up St. Pat's against Dundalk, or even Dundalk against Derry in the first game next season. Wherever Shells go, it's going to be a massive interest, and like, already you're just buzzing for it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier about there's so many different stories that, you know, each week that people can latch on to, and I'm sure you could kind of build on and you know, it's just one of them leagues that I think every single game is going to have some kind of backstory to it. But look, it's going to be, it's like you said, it's going to be a short off season in terms of with the World Cup now in November. So I think everything's moved forward a bit. So I think everyone will be eagerly waiting the fixture list release.
Yeah, and Sinead, I was saying there last week that, like, if you look at the clubs this season, the way they were, there would be big expectation on clubs next season. Like, Sligo finished third. Bows would be expected to do better next season. Pats were going to finish second. Derry have Rory Higgins in charge. Shamrock Rovers are expected to more or less win the league anyway. So, like, some manager has to kind of be let down, or some manager has to have a disappointing season. And, like, Dan slags me about these young managers in the league. Now Kev Doherty's joined the fray as well. Like, there's so much competition there. And even you see, which was really interesting, Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's, their last two games, they basically played with no real recognised striker. They played with, like, you know, Graham Burke is up front for Rovers, but like Pat's in a bit of Robbie Benson, Chris Farter. So there's a lot going on in the coaching element of the league as well, and somebody's going to be disappointed next season.
Yeah, well, there's only a couple of trophies they can really win, isn't it? So more than likely, the majority of them are going to be disappointed, depending on what their actual targets are. Like, so, like, if you're going through it, like, what will be the targets for Bowles next season? Like, will Keith Long be expected to be able to qualify for Europe again? I kind of get the feeling with Bowles and with Keith Long, like, it's almost like as if the same thing is constantly being asked of him, which is to be able to rebuild a team, find pluck players maybe who are coming back from the UK, get a couple coming through, try and find like getting how what he did with Georgie Kelly this year has been incredible in terms of how he's been able to inspire him and get even so much more out of him. But you kind of expect him, well, what more can he do? What can he keep on doing that same thing? Like it's going to be very difficult. It must be kind of demoralizing for him as well to kind of realize that pretty much after a season and building and stuff, that back to square one and having to rebuild, you know. So it depends what different clubs' ambitions are. Obviously, like Rovers' ambitions are there to go and win the league. I would have thought Pats, if they had a kept Stephen O'Donnell, their ambition would have been, I would imagine it is, to go and properly put an even more serious challenge up to Rovers. Like Sligo, yeah, they finished third. They were top of the table. What was it after the first batch of fixtures? But they kind of failed. They failed badly. Like, they went through a serious patch and they were still in the top four. And
like, they're in Europe, though, and Bows aren't, like.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously with Derry City, yeah, like Rudy Higgins, even though he hasn't got the pedigree in terms of actually doing it as a coach, in terms of actually having a challenge for the title, you would imagine with some of the signings that they've already made and could possibly make before the season starts, that's what their ambition would be. Or will it be to just build slowly and get into Europe and try and do well in a cup or something like that? So, like, it's a strange one, but like this might sound totally ridiculous, but like the only team there who by rights you would say should actually be feeling, yeah, we really should be winning the league, are Shamrock Rovers at the moment. No other club really, I don't think, has actually been good enough to say, yeah, like, no, this is our time. And what Pats would say might have felt like they were, but because of everything that's happened, they're kind of like, it's gonna be a bit of a, let's see what happens to the start of the season. Can Tim Clancy maintain that? As we're saying, that maintain that momentum. But you look around at the rest of them, and like, who would you say? Like, I don't know. Like, even like, tell me if I'm talking shy here. But like, who would you say can actually say, you know what? Yeah, we have everything in place to go and properly challenge for the league at the moment. Oh, I only see that. That's the only. They're the only ones I would say. I don't see anyone else winning the league apart from Rovers. Really, don't.
Damn.
Well, no, I mean, that could end up just being the obvious scenario, but there'd be a lot more scraps underneath it, and a lot of Dublin derbies as well. But we will be back, actually. We will have one more show. We will have an end of year review. We're just going to wait till we're out of isolation or whatever. What do we call your situation, Johnny? Just sort of self-imposed isolation, castaway. Yeah, it's like something like that. So we will actually be back for maybe more of a review. I think it feels like there's so much excitement around the 2022 season that every sort of sentence is the same, because you start listing all these possibilities. And as you said, it could just all come back to like Rovers winning the league by 8 points, like the bit of Jack Byrne coming back, you know, and he might just help them winning all of those games that maybe they've struggled with this year, the 93rd minute goals against maybe some of the lesser sides. I think they're the ones that he'd completely dominate and wouldn't have those issues. But that's next week's. Of course, at another time in our lives, you know, the main drama in the last week might have been the PFAI team of the year, like being put out there in the mix.
That
might have put, like, that might have got us through it, you know. So, like, I mean, the first division team, I mean, I don't know who was voting for that, but of course it was the players. I love this because, like, honestly, you know, as media, you spend most of your time being accused of knowing nothing, and I mean, often it's fair. But like, this is the one where it's like, sorry lads, like, you know, you can't give me the you've never played the game stuff here. These are the people who've played all the games, you know, we're voting here. And obviously there's some excellent players in the first division team, including Brendan, but I suppose it's the premier one that seems to have generated more anger and discussion. And Brendan, like, people are going to listen to this. Is it all a popularity contest, really, this? Because, like, why is Danny Mandrew not in there? Do people just vote for their mates, vote against people they don't like? Now, you're a PFAR man, so you're not gonna say that, but what sort of games goes on with this stuff? Are you very happy that this represents the top 11?
I think, first of all, like you said, it is voted by the players, like, and you know, it is a tough one, like, because I think the whole LOI TV thing has opened up the ability to so many more games for players to watch, you know, whereas in the past it would have been just kind of who you've just played against, you know, and that's the only thing, or you might be relying on reading reports in the newspapers of a Saturday morning, you know. But I think you just have to take it on its merit that it's voted for by the players that play against each other week in, week out, and you know, that's what they see fit, and you know, the votes are sent in. And
when did the voting take place, Clarky?
I think it was a couple of weeks before the end of the season.
I heard it was six.
The first division was obviously out first because we finished earlier than the Premier Division. And then the Premier Division kind of went out a couple of weeks after that, you know.
So you don't all just get, yeah. So I was going to say, you don't just all get together at a certain point and decide which Rovers player you'll allow in, though.
No. So what would have happened was before COVID, Ollie and Stephen and the PFA Ireland guys would come around to each individual club and get into dressing rooms and kind of oversee the whole voting process. Obviously now with COVID, players are in their bubbles and that, so you know, you can't have kind of outside people just coming in, you know. So what we rely on now is the delegates at each club. Each club has a PFA Ireland delegate, which, you know, we'd communicate with, so they would have been sent all the voting forms, and then that's how it would have, they would have overseen the voting and that.
We're going to have to wrap up, Clarky, but we brought you on for a couple of reasons. Could you give us a plug to what yourself and Conan are going to do, I think, later on this month?
Yeah, it's actually in 10 days' time, the 11th. We've been talking about it for a couple of years now. Obviously, Conan's done a lot of charity stuff. I actually would have helped him kind of behind the scenes with a bit of it, so I said I'd get involved in this one. So we're going around all the League of Ireland grounds over the course of, what, I think it's 2.5 days. I think it's about 1,200 kilometres in total. And we're not allowed to leave the ground then till we hit the crossbar. You know, we're lucky we've been backed by my own sponsors, Precision, who look after my gloves. They're sorting us out with all the kit and all the balls and the gear to wear and stuff. And Radon, the owner of Precision, they're looking after the hotels for us. And Go-Car are actually looking after a vehicle for us. So shout out to them for helping us out. But we're looking for everyone to get involved. If whatever stadium we're in, you know, people can come down and get involved in that and give us a dig out. But it's all for a great cause. It's for Make-A-Wish. They've been really hurt with the COVID situation. They haven't been able to grant wishes to the kids and that. So even kind of fundraising stuff, they haven't been able to do. So look, anything we can do to help any donations we receive from anyone will be greatly received.
Absolutely. And get onto our page on Twitter and you'll find a link to it. And I suppose before we finish up, Dan, are we concluding like two or three of the maddest days in your journalistic life?
I suppose so. I mean, again, let's not go back to the point, but it's been more aligned with the single parenting dramas, which I just think is that's definitely added a layer to it that I will never forget. I will definitely never forget.
In the background there.
It's just an unfortunate coincidence. Like, no one really cares about this, but it's managed to like coincide with like my daughter's starting to learn how to stand on her own and to climb. So, you know, you can just like sit down for 5 minutes to try and find out like who's left, who's going where, and you can't be that, you know, complacent anymore because you might
try and Tim Clancy's bringing in.
I don't think she's aware of that. No, I know, but I mean, I'll ask her in the morning and see if she knows. You know, see what the crack is. She might be on top of more things than we know. If she could dictate all the discussions she's heard in the last couple of days, she'd probably look for someone to take her away and probably call social services if possible. I think she actually took my phone and tried to press an emergency number earlier. So I'm guessing that was a cry for help.
Hopefully, she didn't get the last dialed. It's been brilliant having you on, Clarky. Delighted to see you back in the Premier Division next season. Thanks for coming on.
No problem, Johnny.
Snady, it's always a pleasure.
It is. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Dan, I guess we'll be in touch.
Yeah, and like we're like this Zoom stuff. I mean, I'm looking forward to being back in person before we finish, because we don't have to do that. End of there was like you were like a game show host thanking all the various contestants as they all finished off. You know, Brendan, you went away with 4,500. It's just way too choreographed, Johnny. I'm not loving it. But we had to do something with the breaking news. But we'll get back to talking in the studio next week. And
I feel as if me and Brendan should pretend to have a conversation now, like what you call. Like Graham Gartland did, where what you call
Paul Dillon and the car park.
We went to the car park. We'll be there.
The amount of feedback we've got. By the way, that is the footballers' football show of the series. By the way, I think every footballer seems to like. I had so many extra, like Aidan O'Keefe, who played for Drogheda, I hadn't spoken to him in years. Got in touch with me completely out of the blue, to say he'd listen to that, and it's like. That is the one that I think people have taken away. But anyway, we're
done. The main thing I took away from that was that Paul Doolan definitely does not have an ego. That's the main thing that I took away.
It's the traffic on the M50 was the real issue. That was later on. But yeah, anyway,
Doolo
friend of the show, to be fair.
Doolo probably has a new League of Ireland job since the start of this show with the way it is. I don't know. What percentage of Premier Division teams have a new manager tomorrow? It's completely off the charts.
He could be the one to make sure that Stevie gets the job in there as the pro license holder.
I'd say he'd love that role.
I'm happy to say that definitely would not be an option, I don't think. I mean, that would be great fun, but the idea of Paul Doolan being anyone's assistant is it's a reality TV show waiting to happen. Someone should do that.
Just sorry, Dan, this is the last thing I'll ask you before we finish. In the last week, what percentage of the 10 Premier Division teams going into the week lost their manager or changed their manager? So we've Watford, Dundalk, Drogheda, obviously Pats.
So that would be 4 out of 10. Do your 40%. Sums there, Johnny. 40%,
Unbelievable.
Having 10 teams really means that you shouldn't be asking anyone else what the percentage is.
Yeah, I worked that out quickly. And just finally, congratulations to UCD. It went under the radar a bit, but UCD back in the Premier Division. A hell of an achievement for Andy Myler. And we send our sympathies to Andy as well on the loss of his dad. That was episode 38. As Dan mentioned, we will be back next week with a sort of a seasonal review. God knows what's going to happen in the intervening week. And that was in association with futuretickling.ie.